Welcome to the Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. Today, we go deep on the food of New Orleans. Julian Kramer and I sat down with Emeril Lagasse when we were in Chicago for our annual Chicago Gourmet Festival. Let's take a listen.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm great, Adam. Born and raised in Chicago?
Well, I was born in the city. I grew up in the suburbs. I have to be honest. This could be fact-checked.
You might just got demoted or something.
I think. But you're based in New York now, right?
Yes. I moved to New York 2.5 years ago to work for Bon Appetit.
Mm-hmm.
Emeril, by the way, it's about 12:04 p.m. and does have a glass of what's that glass of white you're
drinking
right now?
This is Gurgage Hills from my friend Mike Gurgage, just turned 90 years old.
Oh wow!
And I've been a big fan of Gurgage Hills for a long time. I'm not trying to promote the wine; I'm not on the payroll, but it's really good juice. And I figured, hey, why not?
I love that the chefs all call it juice. I love that. Is that something that's just
my wife has juice.
Your wife has juice.
Yes, she has a winery with Ali Costa from. Dan Costa
yeah,
Brown?
Cool.
I have nothing to do with it.
I think you have a lot to do with a
I
lot
just
of
drink
things.
It.
Yeah. Emeril, I mean, it's interesting. You're at a point in your career where you are one of those guys who kind of does know everybody. And let's be honest. And you were saying last night you went to Danny Meyer's new bar, Green River.
See,
in
I'm
Chicago.
Trying to impress you so that I could get like one of those, you know, affiliate jobs with Bon Appetit. So I can do this, be the spotter for you, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, no. I, you know,
we'll pay you $12 an hour.
Exactly. My culinary assistant, Alain Joseph, is super into cocktails. He's New York-based, and he hangs out literally about 3 or 4 days a week at a place called Dutch Keels in Long Island City, where they were one of the first guys in New York to do craft cocktails, right? So he's really into it, and he's gotten me into it. And, you know, we're building another restaurant right now in New Orleans that we want to focus on a little bit more crafty cocktails. And I didn't even know, as you and I talk about, that Danny even had something out of the city other than Shake Shack. Right?
You told me. I'm like, that's why we got to hire you as our new stringer.
Green River is what it's called. Really hip, GR. It's on the 18th floor of this building right off of Michigan. And I was super impressed. I was not only impressed with the cocktails, but they have a really talented chef. And he just like sent out some dishes that were mind-blowing. I mean, for a cocktail bar.
Huh.
I mean, so if you get a chance, check it out. If not, maybe your next visit, being a Chicagoan.
I better go. It's on the 18th floor. Does it have good views?
Stunning views.
Chef, so you had mentioned that a couple of days before you went to Rick Bayless's Frontera Grill and you hadn't been there in a while.
I've been friends with Rick for over 30 years, and I've always been a big Rick Bayless fan, his lovely wife. They're a real deal. I mean, they like, you know, they like go to Mexico. They take their staff. They go for a month. I mean, it's like he's been doing that for years, not just like recently.
They practice what they preach.
I don't know. Absolutely. So I hadn't been in a while, and my two assistants that are with me have not been. And so I said, hey, let's go have lunch at Frontera Grill. And absolutely, Rick, he was there, and he just blew us away. It's still as good as it was. When did it open? 87.
When Julia was 1 year old.
Oh, my God.
87. So think about that. You know, he's also a Chicago institution.
To maintain that level of quality for that long, you can't overstate how impressive that is.
You know, Adam, what was really impressive for me is that the front of the house was so in tune to what was going on with the back of the house.
Yep.
They didn't miss a beat. They knew every ingredient. Our servers were fantastic. The cocktails were fantastic. The food was just amazing. I mean, really, from the start with the chips and duo salsas and guacamole to like crazy stuff that we were eating with these moles and all of this crazy stuff, it was dynamite. I can't wait to go back.
Now you must all right. This is a good problem to have, but I imagine you're the type of guy that when you go to any restaurant in America, they just throw the entire football phrase? They throw the farm at you, or what is that phrase? Does that get exhausting after a while, or how do you deal with that?
Yeah, well, you know, back in the day, like we told some stories yesterday with Charlie, had many trips with Charlie Trotter, that is, to France and Italy, etc. We chased restaurants, and we used to be able to eat 3-star restaurants like twice a day. I can't do that. I can't do that like once a week these days. It's just like it's exhausting.
Because those restaurants are designed to be a once a year special
and
occasion
once,
meal.
And one shot, right? Yeah. They have one service done.
Yeah.
And when that service is done, they pack up, they clean the kitchen, and they don't come back till 6 o'clock for, you know, dinner service. So answer your question, yes. A lot of times that happens. You know, there are a lot of extras that come out. I do the same thing in my restaurant, though.
Yeah.
You know, if you come,
you're going to kill me.
You know, I'm not going to kill you because these days I have respect for the human body.
Do you politely let the waiters know, like, hey, I'd love to taste this?
Well, here's an example.
Last night,
because we ordered like a couple of dishes. We ordered this like really this whiting that was like lightly smoked, very really interesting fluke. Crudo, because it wasn't a typical crudo. And what else did we order? And then all of a sudden, the chef, like, it started coming out. And then when the 32-ounce, so there's three of us. So when the 32-ounce special farm ribeye steak came out in a pan with smothered with chanterelles and pearl onions, I was like, okay, time out. I am done.
That's when you tap out, as they say in wrestling.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, my God.
That's right.
What about in terms of people? And you have a connection with the people in a way that people feel, you know, as if they know you and they trust you. And when you're out, I mean, how are people coming up to you constantly? And how do you give them the attention that you want while still living your life?
Yeah, it's tough. It's a fine line because, you know, I think the most perception is that I'm very reachable from doing television for so long that people feel that, well, it's just a guy from Emerald Live. I mean, he's... You know, we can touch him, and he's a regular guy, and that's cool, and I am. But, you know, after a while, too, it's like, you know, like you're in a serious family dinner at a restaurant, you know, with kids and stuff, and, hey, you know, can you sign my shoe? It's all part of it, but I try to keep it as balanced as I can and as polite as I can, and I just ask people to do the same thing.
Kramer, now let's talk about TV for a minute. What was your experience growing up with Emeril on TV? Do you remember seeing him for the first time or?
I don't remember TV without Emeril.
Wow. I'm really warming up to you now.
Do you think about that, Emeril? Do you ever think like, what would my life been like if I had never done TV? You know, would you still be at Commander's Palace?
I left Commander's with Ellen Dick's blessing and opened Emeril's in 1990. And my mission was to just open a white tablecloth restaurant in New Orleans and pioneer the warehouse district. And I thought that if I could be a great restaurant for New Orleanians, then I would have a shot to make it because I think they're pretty tough critics. They're not so tough as it is verbally, but they're into food. I mean, food is in the house.
But
I mean,
the fact, as your accent might betray, you're not from New Orleans.
No,
were they resistant from this guy from Massachusetts coming down here to tell us how to eat, or were they receptive?
No, because I never disrespected tradition. So, you know, when I took over Commander's in 1982, I had big shoes to fill because, you know, Paul had just left to do K. Paul's officially.
Paul Prudhoe.
Even though that he opened in 80. Mm-hmm. Kay was running the restaurant for a bit, and Paul would go in between. And so, you know, and then working for the Brennan family, I mean, I went to school again. You know, I got paid to go to school and work for Ella Brennan. But getting back to what we were saying, I never disrespected tradition. So what I would do is in my off time, you know, I would search the country, the countryside. I would visit farms. I began working with fishermen, going on fishing boats, and learning about the Gulf and learning about the bayou, et cetera, et cetera. And so I never really, when I took over Commander's, I really never had a page on the menu. I basically had to, you know, do signature Commander's dishes. And then slowly after several months, you know, when Ella and Dick felt very comfortable that I could cook and that I understood tradition and that I was really working hard at understanding. You know, like on an off day, go to Antoine's, which is, you know, 200 and some years old, just to eat Pompano and Papillote to understand really what Pompano and Papillote really was. I mean, you can read it in a book, but to go and actually do it at one of the restaurants that put it on the map 200 years ago, that says a lot. And so that's how I approached it. And finally, you know, after some time, you know, Ella and Dick, you know, I had a window where it was, you know, Emeril and then, you know, Commander's signature dishes, but then it was Emeril. And then that little window opened to like, you know, half the menu, like the page. And then they felt comfortable that I was, you know, I had a very intellectual approach to what we were doing. I wasn't just putting like lobster and crawfish with blueberry sauce and, you know, fried beignets, you know, it was like the real deal. And, It was a great journey.
Let's talk about, so you started TV, and who kind of nurtured or encouraged your TV persona? You have a very larger than life presence on TV, but so where did that come from?
So when I was, you know, when I was a young boy, you know, I was influenced by Julia Child, mm-hmm. and I used to watch her. And I'd watch a little bit of Graham Kerr, but it was really Julia that was like the big time influence for me. And then, of course, later on, as life, you know, progressed, I was a sous chef at the Parker House in the 70s. And I remember that I was running the restaurant, and the maitre d' came back and said, Julia Child's coming to dinner tonight. And I freaked out because, you know, here's my idol. And now all of a sudden she's coming to dinner. So long story short, I had periwinkles that I had bought from the fishmonger that morning and had some. And that's what I made Julia Child. I made her periwinkles and champagne sauce. I'll never forget it. And she was blown away. We became friends. And then later on, you know, became more friends. And then we got really, 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 really close. And she's a great lady.
But yeah, she always struck me that her TV personality, that fancy, impressive food could also be fun.
No question about it. I mean, how many times were you watching a show and she dropped a chicken on the floor and just like, whoop, oh.
3 second rule.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You know, amazing, amazing stuff. Good TV.
Well, Emerald, thank you so much for stopping by
today. Thanks, guys. So glad that you had me stop by.
Yeah, well, we're not letting you go just yet. Right now, Julia, you're going to handle the lightning round. Uh-oh. We're going to ask you either or questions, and you have to answer. And it's an either or.
Okay.
No equivocating. No, I love both. You know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Po' boy or muffaletta?
God, that's tough. Today, I'm going to have to say muffaletta.
How come?
Napoleon House toasted. Extra olive oil on the side.
Wow. Yeah,
what is the mark of a good muffaletta for people who have never had one before?
The cold cuts are very, very important. The bread is important, and the olive salad that's in it is very, very important. The olive salad cannot just be green olives. There has to be a combination.
Ooh.
And it also has to have very fine chopped celery and onion in it.
Ooh, I like that.
Yep.
That sounds delicious. Sazerac or Hurricane?
Sazerac.
All right. I don't know what you're going to think about this one. Kick It Up a Notch or Bam?
Ooh. Well,
Julia just winced.
Can I tell you about that? Because
I love
Kick It Up. Kick It Up a Notch. I always kicked it up a notch during the days of Essence of Emerald. I always kicked it up a notch, which meant me to the viewer that I was going to raise the salt or raise the spice or whatever.
Also, some people forget Essence of Emerald. That there was no audience. Your original show was just you,
right? Bam came from. Doing 8 television shows a day. Do you know what that means? 8 television shows a day? It's unheard of.
Exhausting.
Nobody shoots 8 television. So being a food show and being that food was what the crew ate. That was crew lunch. And so you do 4 or 5 shows and break for lunch and then come back. And as Adam said, no studio audience. So BAM came from waking up the crew.
Wake the F up.
Right.
All right.
That's great. Crawfish or shrimp?
Crawfish. I love shrimp. I eat shrimp a couple of times a week. We're very blessed to have amazing shrimp season in the Gulf. But there's something about crawfish when they're in season. I like them boiled. I like them out of the shell. I like them sauteed. We have a pasta dish that we do when it's in season at Emeralds that is to die for with smoked mushrooms. When crawfish are in season, I'm going to these joints, literally they're joints, and I'm getting a few pounds of crawfish and I'm sucking head and pinching tail.
And I know you've been.
And I am the one that taught Julia Child how to suck head and pinch tail.
Oh my God, that's a quote. Okay, would you rather binge watch Ina Garten or Guy Fieri?
That one's easy.
All right, I'm going to get in trouble no matter what answer I say. Yeah. So I'm gonna take the least and say Guy.
He's easier to deal with than Ina. I'm going to say Ina. We'll balance it out.
I love them both.
I do too.
I have a question. Crab cake or soft shell crab?
I'm a soft shell crab guy.
What's your favorite way to prepare them?
Well, I used to do a dish at Commander's, and I occasionally do it at Emerald's still. I like to bread them, but there's a way to bread them that they're not heavy. I soak mine for a little bit in buttermilk that's flavored with a little bit of hot sauce and essence. And I just sort of let the soft shell, you know, when the order comes in, I let the soft shell sit in the buttermilk mixture. And then when we're ready to pick them up, I'll take them out of the buttermilk mixture, and I have about an 85% flour, 15% cornmeal with essence inside of that mixture.
So, yeah, it's always important to season every step, correct?
Yep. One shot in the flour, not double. I don't double bread them. And then into oil, canola, vegetable oil, about 370 degrees.
Deep fry or pan fry?
Deep fry. Mm-hmm. And there's a way that you can hold them with tongs so that the legs properly stand up so that they cook evenly throughout. And so you don't get where the meat pot is, where the gills are. Mm-hmm. If you don't do that, then they stick together. And then you get too much of a bread bite as opposed to a crab bite.
Wow, you're an authority. Last question, and you got to pick one. Butter or olive oil?
Butter.
Oh, wow, I like that. Just no question.
Well, going back to Julia, you know, there was never enough butter for her. More butter. You know, it was just, there's just something about butter.
All right, I'm Adam Rapport. That's Julia Kramer. And thank you so much, Emma Lagasse. Pick up his new book, Essential Emerald, out now.
This podcast is brought to you by executive producer Belle Cushing and project manager Carrie Polis, with editing by Mitra Kaboli. The theme music is by Valerie and the Greedies. Tune in every Wednesday for a new episode on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Bourbon Street.